Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacy Cole, and Todd Michaels.
I'm going to turn my mic on there, and welcome back to the program. We're joined now this hour, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I want to start, Robin, by talking about Jackie a little bit there. We just got to hear a little bit about her background, where she's been, what she's done. You know, it's an interesting... an interesting comparison, and I've seen a lot of people comparing the two over the last handful of days, not only in looks, but in terms of personality. But what do you glean out of Jackie Fulford of what we've known so far?
Just kind of what you're already saying, Tony, and that is the comparisons are obvious to people from the outside, and what it looks like this family is doing, and there's so many more personalities I want to dive into with this family. Mm-hmm. But they're living in an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And when people are trying to live in an echo chamber, I don't think they're doing it by intention. It's just the way they are. They're going to surround themselves by people, images, and things that validate their own self-opinion and who they are. I think it's really exasperated a lot in this family with everyone that's involved, and not just of who they are, but who they think they are and who they're trying to be, because then that goes into what Charlie does as well with who he surrounds himself with. So mm-hmm. It's pretty fascinating, unhealthy family dynamic we're seeing play out in many areas.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Stacey, what was your thoughts on the doppelganger of Donna?
Oh, please. I think we gravitate toward people who make us comfortable. And if you spend a lot of time staring at yourself in the mirror, I think... that shows. I mean, it's just like a Cruella de Vil representation in my mind. I guess it's that familiar sense of she's comfortable with that mm-hmm. kind of person, with that piercing look. That's what she gravitates toward. I couldn't see her getting some compassionate lawyer. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't fit her persona at all.
Yeah.
I think it's spot on.
Do you think if she had her way, and we never heard any rumblings of this, but they went through several attorneys. I wonder if it was ever thrown around at some point in conversation of Donna wants to represent herself, but everybody's like, no, we're not going to let that happen. But she certainly seems like one that might bring that to the table as part of the conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the police interrogation of Wendy Adelson's ex-boyfriend, Dr. Jeffrey Lacoste, is what we're about to dive into here. And this is so interesting. I had a chance to take a look at it over the weekend. I know, Robin, you had a chance to watch. I think we all had a chance to see some of it here. And this is from way back, I believe, 2012, 13, 14, somewhere around there. This is shortly after the actual arrest and the charges against Siegfriedo Garcia, Catherine McBona, and I'm not sure if Charlie was arrested at this point in time or not. But it was very telling, because what he's able to reveal in this interrogation is far more than what we're actually seeing in court. And I think it gives us more data points, more information about who this family is as a whole. And what begins as suspicion on him quickly flips as LaCase unloads disturbing details about Wendy, her brother, the entire Adelson family, from Wendy saying life would be convenient if Dan wasn't around, to Charlie breaking about money schemes and even saying he wanted Dan dead. There is a lot in here, and we're going to work our way through it. Let's start out with this. When detectives had pressed LaCase on what he knew about the Adelsons, he recalled one conversation that really did haunt him a lot. He says Wendy confided that her brother Charlie had actually legitimately explored the idea of hiring someone to kill Dan. And I know we heard him say this on the stand the other day, but here's the very fresh way it came out the first time he was asked about it, answering not in a joking way, but in a very chillingly serious, serious way. This is Lacoste explaining that disclosure.
It doesn't have to be useful here. Let's not put it big. Let's go with what you know specifically. Wendy had reported to me that Charlie had considered all the options possible to take care of this problem. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And when she said it,
when did she disclose this to you?
I don't remember when. But she said it was chilling because she said, it's something confidentially. She said, I think Charlie kind of looked into some options, like literally saw how and why, how you would do this if you did it.
Let me ask you, Robin, on this. I mean, just before we get into more of Jeffrey's stuff, I know you had a chance to really watch this in full. So I want to get your opinion as someone who has investigated people, who has questioned people, who's gone through this with other human beings. How does Jeffrey Lacoste read to you as a person, as being a reliable source?
It's a great question because there's multiple layers with him. And first of all, I will say he's extremely credible in the content he's providing in the definitely of the area of leads, thoughts, and ideas for investigators to follow. Because if you just watch throughout the video, by the way, I think he would make just he himself a great Bravo series of Life with the Adelsons. I mean, I'm sorry to digress, Tony, but you sent me the clips to watch, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't just watch the clips. I'd literally watch it from beginning to end. I couldn't put the damn thing down because he is just such a fascinating character.
Yeah.
Because of this. So his tempo of disclosure, so as a behaviorist, is very consistent. He was very congruent, very forthright when he was volunteering information, which what investigators are doing is like, how fast and freely are you volunteering information that's easy to give? And then when they ask a more challenging question, are you still maintaining that same tempo, that same tenor, the intonation, the voice, is everything maintained in a baseline? Because that's when you're assessing, is there high probability of veracity and truth there? And so he is completely congruent on everything, with a few exceptions, and I'll get to that in a second. But so he's very credible in a lot of those areas. Where he loses some credibility is he is under deeply, self-admittedly, the spell of Wendy. Hardcore. Mm-hmm. So you don't know quite whether he's saying things when he's trying to defend her, whether it's out of objectivity, or because he even said it, a 1% chance of getting back together with her. So that actually kind of hits his credibility a little bit, but at the same time, though, he's aware of it. So it was a really fascinating read. The thing that really struck me was when he was going through the things he heard Charlie say. Now, granted, Charlie's convicted, so we know it's guilty. And I know the focus right now is on Wendy and the mother. But what was interesting was he remembered, the first thing that struck me with him, he had such a memory for dates. Mm-hmm. And even times, like without having to go back to notes, or he didn't even prepare because he came right from this cross-country trip right to the cops and started regurgitating information. That was profound. And he even said, I have a really sharp memory for these types of things, except when he's asked, and you saw right there in the clip, do you remember exactly when this happened? And he didn't remember when that really profound thing was stated. So he was truthful in it, but it was just curious that he didn't remember that exact date. So that those kind of things, it's a blip. From he remembers dates of everyone except this one. So high levels of veracity with him. So he would be a lead generator. That's what I'd regard him.
So if we put Jeff, Wendy, and who else on an island together, make the reality show. I say Bobby Brown. I say bring Bobby Brown back. He was great on the Whitney Houston show back in the day. The Being Bobby Brown, that was a good one.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, just mix them all in. It'd be great.
You know, and Charlie the convict, the dentist just surrounds himself with green berets. What?
Yeah.
What is that about? Have you guys talked about that? What is that kind of dynamic? Why did he do that?
This is talked about in the greater context of the interview. If you watch it in whole, Charlie is always bragging about how he's friends with these Green Berets, and he tends to align himself with militant type individuals or people who have some sort of a military background. I don't know if it's a give me some insight on that and why one was is walking around bragging about this when you're a dentist.
Right? I mean, the two don't go together, do they?
No.
It's just insecurities. You know, so here's, boy, pure conjecture on this one. So here's a boy, yeah. And I'll say boy because he is a boy,
that
was under his mother's thumb for so long, maybe even bullied because being a mama's boy. And mm-hmm. so his way of not being a mama's boy dentist is surround mm-hmm. himself by tough guys and just try to be a tough guy yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the people he's dating, I mean, is bizarre and questionable in terms of, okay, you're a professional. Why are you remotely close to someone that has that close of a tie to the Latin Kings? It doesn't make any sense. Like that's not the same ecosystem. Like why you don't want to put yourself in a world where you're that close to crime. It's not the world you live in.
It's the world he feels most comfortable in.
That's true. Yeah. That's an interesting point, Robin. It is. So why is that?
Because that's where his mind is. He's not a dentist in his mind. And mm-hmm. you know, that's the way of making his money that his mommy wanted him to do. But if you are aligning and you feel more comfortable with that level of character, these degenerates, and not saying Green Beret, but you know where you're dealing with drug dealers.
Yeah.
The fact you're able to find hitmen, you know, they're just without batting an eyelash, you know, it kind of shows you who you're aligning yourself with. Remember, we're always going to act in our own best interest in terms of our safety, security, and prosperity. Mm-hmm. We do things and surround ourselves with people that allow us to feel safe from our own perspective and our own context. These people allowed him to feel safe and comfortable with who he was. They didn't challenge who he was. So that's where he saw himself. And so he was a poser in all these other areas. And so when you bring in someone, you know, like is the doctor, Dr. Jeffrey Lacasse there as the ex-boyfriend. So here's a guy who's really, really well-educated. He seems like a pretty decent guy, although a little neurotic. Mm-hmm. And so he challenges Charlie without even trying to challenge Charlie because he's just comfortable with who he is. He just is really fixated on his sister. And so it's an interesting dynamic to watch insecure people with more secure people and a sister who's manipulating the hell out of everyone in her life around her. And then a mother who's trying to control everything. That's what I mean. Is this not a reality show or what?
Well, why is Charlie acting that way? He's a poser with money and power, essentially. And that's how he's kind of able to operate around, you know, some of these folks that are, you know, chilling with hitmen and things of that nature, because he has something that they want, money and power. But the problem with it is why does he feel comfortable acting that way? He was brought up in this very fortunate life, this very like lifestyle that was not, you know, in the hood. So what does that say though about the actions of Donna or the people in general that he was brought up around, that sort of behavior, that sort of darker controlling, you know, we're somehow relating this to the streets and hitmen type mentality of a family that seemed to really on the surface come across as country club.
Well, that's part of it too. And these are people he can control more easily. He can try to impress them. And so it's part of who he's comfortable with. It's part of who he's control. Mm-hmm. Need more data points on this crazy family because every time you turn over a rock, you're like, wow, there's five things under that rock I never knew were there.
Yeah.
So I just, again, it's part of the control issue with everyone in this family, learned behaviors of control, of psychological guilt and shame that are implied by others. I guarantee you the mother was doing that.
Yeah.
So he just learned behaviors from her of how you control others and who to control.
And how interesting that then translated more into folks like this that are willing to go take out and do a hit than the country club image that Donna was trying to portray. But more deep down, Donna was more street, at least in her mind, you know,
than from New York.
Then, yeah. How interesting. I mean, I mean, this is all conjecture, obviously. Sure. Let's take another look at some more from Jeff and his testimony, or this is him talking to police in the interrogation. Also remembered Wendy talking about how trapped she felt in Tallahassee, tied there only because of her custody battle with Dan. And in one of those late night conversations, he says she let slip a remark that would later sound almost prophetic, that life would be far easier if Dan just wasn't around anymore. Take a look.
We're also talking about us, because I was like, would you ever leave under any circumstances? Yeah, I know you don't love it here. Am I going to be dating you for 2 years and you just move? She's like, I can't. You know, I can't because of Danny. And she said, yeah, it doesn't matter. Something about it would be convenient if Danny wasn't around anymore. But, you know, he's wanting to happen to him or something like that. She said, but Charlie actually looked into how that would be done and how much it would cost. She might have said, I think, Charlie. I don't remember. But it was chilling. In the moment, I was like, my stomach flipped. I was like, whoa.
The crux of the statement is, my brother Charlie has looked into how much it would cost to
take care of somebody. This guy has very little empathy. He's just a weird guy. I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying, if you're looking at somebody, you can't miss Charlie. I mean, I think that's more likely than a romantic.
I mean, so this very much shows us that she had some knowledge of, you know, Charlie was thinking down this possible line of where to go. But what does that say, Robin, about someone who just feels that open, that easy to share in the relationship, that my brother was thinking of hiring a hitman? It's not just a, oh, it would be easier if life, you know, if they weren't here or whatnot. It's literally going to the direction and the steps that would need to be taken to remove this person from the planet.
I think Wendy just has unintentional leakage.
Yeah.
And we see it a lot. You know, I think she felt comfortable with him, and because he's disarming. He's a disarming guy. And so, you know, she felt comfortable with him. She's known him a while, and she's talking about her situation because he's obviously just trying to completely influence and persuade her to stay local there. And she's kind of explaining the ways in which that could happen. And, you know, inside the family dynamic itself, because I thought about this a lot, too. So what's the likelihood that Wendy knew? What's the likelihood of Donna being part of this? The fact that they don't seem to really, and even at first I was thinking that they're protecting Wendy, and yeah, they're very protective of Wendy, but this family communicates emotionally, not pragmatic or cognitively or thoughtfully necessarily a lot of times. And so when you have an emotional regulation issue, like Charlie definitely seems to have, that means you run through things out of your mouth. And so the fact that people started understanding what his intentions were is not surprising, because he runs off at the mouth, which would eventually get to Wendy. And since she has learned behavior from the rest of the family of not being able to regulate what comes out of your mouth, the world's going to know. I mean, this is why watching dumb people do dumb things is hilarious, because these people are a bunch of friggin' morons just run off at the mouth. I mean, just watching emotional people operate with their lower brain and not their higher brain is just, it's comical sometimes. If it wasn't so tragic that someone lost their life, which is also interesting too. Zio and I had mentioned this on one of the previous episodes, that I was really curious about why Wendy divorced Dan.
Yeah.
And it makes more sense. But again, it's Dr. Jeff's, you know, interpretation from his optic. And granted, that's got a bias to it. But I thought this was very revealing on that end as well, because I was trying to understand what's the animus that, you know, what was the impetus for this whole action? It makes a lot more sense now just watching it, watching stupid people do stupid things because stupid people are pissed off.
They all seem to have a real problem keeping their mouths shut.
Yeah, they do.
Every single member of this family, nobody knows when to shut up. I mean, from their phone calls to each other to everything, it's just nobody can hold anything back, and it's all to their detriment.
Right.
Can I throw something in, Robin? I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, sorry, Steve. I was occupying too much time, as always.
No, not at all. Not at all, please. My question is, could there have been an alternate universe where they took out the mother? You know what I mean? Like, we've had enough of her shit. Let's get the hitman and go after her and be done with her. And so that we can live our lives. I mean, that's where my brain goes, is like, why did they go after Dan Why didn't they go after her?
Well, because they had the allegiance to mom. I get what you're saying.
I think it's just a lifetime of reps.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a lifetime of growing up under that, granted, it was controlling, it was unhealthy, but one of the reasons why they have such open communication, as you're noting, with each other is because they felt safe together. Because you didn't really see Wendy fighting mom and dad coming all the way up to drive the 30-something year old back down to Florida, to Southern Florida where they live, and treating her like a 6-year-old. You know, it none of these things from, again, the optic we're getting, you know, from Dr. Jeff here, none of these behaviors seem surprising inside that circle.
Sure.
And so for them now, what I do see, and Stacey, to your point, I think what's happened is that older brother definitely did. The older brother's like, you people are a bunch of wackadoos. You know, you got all broken brains. I'm fleeing the coop on you nutters. And so I think what you're seeing is he is the objective one.
Yeah.
Though I get the sense from limited data that he didn't burn necessarily any bridges. He just made them very null. Mm-hmm. And I think that now that he re-entered the picture, bringing some objectivity, and you're seeing people pointing the fingers at each other and they're seeing some objectivity, that's why you're seeing some cracks and fissures happen here. But it's really challenging for them because every time they have an inclination, maybe to your point, to go against the mother, that would invalidate their own opinion of their own behaviors for their entire lives. And that's very, very difficult for human beings to do. Typically, when do we see things like that happen? When people hit rock bottom. And so when you have that breaking aha moment, I have nothing else to lose moment. And I don't think any of them reach that yet. Although I don't think we're going to see a lot of tears shed when she goes to jail, if she's convicted of this thing.
There might be a sense of relief that finally this horrible mastermind, puppet master, can no longer pull the strings, but who knows what she can do behind bars too.
Yeah. And sense of relief is interesting. I don't know if they'll immediately necessarily feel a sense of relief if she was such a big sense of comfort for so many years. I think it'll be a period of confusion as the veil of that oppression starts lifting and they start seeing, wow, there's a whole world outside this little bubble I was kind of unaware of before.
Yeah.
But again, pure conjecture, but just from what we're observing and seeing play out, seems to make some sense.
And that's assuming that they stay out of prison. That's assuming Wendy doesn't assumes Harvey's not going to be charged.
That's a big question right now.
That's a whole other conversation. Yeah, I mean, that's a very big question right now. According to Lacoste, Charlie wasn't shy about voicing how much he despised Dan. It wasn't just those little comments here and there. He says it wasn't just those offhanded grumblings. It was repeated, blunt, and said with a lot of venom, words you do not easily forget. Let's take a look.
Fiercely protective of Wendy. And I've heard him say, I like to kill that motherfucker. I mean, I've heard him say that so many times. Now, I've said that out loud, too, and I didn't do it. But there's something different about Charlie. He reminds me of like an antisocial.
Charlie's an older brother?
Yeah.
She's the baby girl?
She's the baby girl.
Is Charlie older or younger than this one up in Albany?
He's the middle kid, I think.
Charlie is?
Yeah. If you had him in front of you, he'd set off your alarm bells.
Ooh, that's powerful.
People say that stuff all the time, though. I got to kill him. I'm going to kill him. You know, not in
my world.
I want to say
how much it's going to cost either. You just go, I'm going to kill you.
When you get into cost, when you get into to cost benefit analysis, that's where it changes.
It just shows the stupidity of these people. How many times, Tony, have we seen these people like this that are, because you're always thinking, well, it's definitely premeditated because you hired someone, but how much intelligence did you have to actually do something stupid, like lay the groundwork for people to say, you know, like Dr. Jeff did, as soon as he heard this, his first thought was, oh, it's Charlie.
I mean,
if you're doing a good job of trying to take out your sister's ex-husband because mm-hmm. he's this horrendous person, according to you, and you're trying to battle for the kids. The last thing you want to do is lay the all the pebbles. You're not just laying breadcrumbs. You're paving an entire road right to yourself. I mean, the fact he even thought he could get away with this when there's so many people.
Yeah.
I mean, you got an ex-boyfriend, and she was dating how many other boyfriends that she's probably sharing the same information with, according to Dr. Jeff, who felt like a jilted lover.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, you did. Well, I mean,
what does it say, too, about Charlie and about the ego of these people, that they feel the need to say these things out loud for the immediate gratification of those around them without in any way, shape, or form thinking about how could this come bite me in the ass? Like, if this does happen, and I just told all these people that I looked into this, I mean, there's no thought pattern beyond the immediate, and the immediate, this must make me feel good right now. I'm going to say it. It makes me puff out my chest, and look, I'm protecting my sister, and I'm saying this in front of the boyfriend. There's no thought that anything, there could be any repercussions from saying these things out loud that are very, very damning. I mean, this is not just like, hey, I'm going to go slash his tires, or I got a friend who's going to do that. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to find him as someone who's going to kill him. I'm looking into it financially, how to get this done. No thought. And that, to me, I mean, it's kind of baffling considering how far Charlie did get in life. He was a doctor. I mean, that takes a little bit of school, a little bit of common sense.
So no one in his life to this point have challenged him on the things he said.
Yeah.
It's pretty. And you said it right when you mm-hmm. stated it, Tony. And that is, if he has a lifetime of reps of being unfiltered, and no one has pushed back to the degree that it impacted him of his unfiltered, stupid mouth, then he's going to feel completely safe to say those things. And where else have we seen this? What are the cases recently of a big notoriety person who's got even more, a boatload more money than Charlie? Did he?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, these people live in their own world where it is their own universe. And when mm-hmm. you live in your own universe, you feel very safe in your own universe. And you don't realize that outside an extremely small circle of people, the rest of the world thinks you're a nutter
mm-hmm.
and they're going to get you. So, and that's, they, people fall into that trap, and because unhealthy behaviors really become insular like this. And so, but to themselves, they thought they're completely healthy and completely normal. They thought the rest of the world was all screwed up. And so that's why he felt completely safe. Although I'm giving him more credit than I should in the fact that he thought about it before he said it. He didn't. He's got zero impulse control.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like Donna doesn't have much impulse control either. So I'm going, oh, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. No. It's not hard to understand Charlie's actions when you look at the impulsivity and neuroticism of Donna.
Yeah, no kidding. And she raised her kids to do the same thing. So Charlie, according to Dr. Jeff, has three girlfriends at one time. And it sounded like Wendy did too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it's that they need that constant validation from outside sources?
Oh, yeah.
That's what feeds borderlines. That's what feeds narcissists. It's all the image. It's feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me. And when you're not getting that constant feedback, you know, they feel dead. Basically.
And very skilled. So it'd be interesting too. So we heard on the reverse side with Charlie about this horrendous side we saw when his guard might have been down, where he felt more comfortable because he's surrounded by people in his control sphere. But he is a dentist. He did have a practice. And so I'm not sure because I don't know, but I would have conjecture that he was probably had the potential to be extremely charismatic outside of his sphere of control and feeling safe, because he would have to have been to get through dental school, to get through education, to have a clientele and all these things. Because the only thing I'm thinking of, well, Wendy's extremely charismatic. She attracted people to her all the time, because that's what Dr. Jeff saw with not just himself, but all the other guys. As a matter of fact, he was so concerned about anything he's saying coming out just in case she wants to get back together with him. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine that, like you said, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. When you're outside of where Charlie felt safe and he felt like he had to manipulate the world, as great sociopaths and psychopaths have to do, he mm-hmm. might have been and come across very charismatic and very invigorating to some people.
Yeah, no, I see that. When news of Dan's murder broke, detectives asked LaCase who he suspected. His answer? Well, it was pretty instant. He says the very first person who came to mind within seconds of hearing it was Wendy's brother, Charlie. Here's how he described that.
Jimmy, this isn't a Vosh burglary or something like that. He's the first, Charlie popped into my head within 20 seconds of hearing this.
Wow.
Boom. There's your answer.
That's called a mic drop or mic drop moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think something like that would be, yeah, it's him. If that's the first thing, and you just touched on it, Robin, sir, if that's the first thing that's coming to your mind, I'm going to just, accuracy, usually those first thoughts can be pretty accurate.
Now you just explore what makes you say that.
Yeah.
Not why, because why can be very subjective to people, but you say what did you observe that allowed you to say that inspired you to say that? And then you just go like I thought these interviewers are really good, except the one guy that just kept getting called, and that was just really distracting. Mm-hmm. But as interviewers, I thought they did a really good job of being very pragmatic, very objective, just the facts, man, but at the same time balancing that with rapport that they needed, because they got a lot of details from. Now, granted, he was extremely compliant. He was mm-hmm. all on board with being helpful and useful. Which is also interesting, because it was interesting watching him absolutely hate Charlie, but absolutely adore Wendy.
Yeah. When he also knows the toxicity of Wendy, which I found,
he's like,
he was wooed by her feminine wilds. He couldn't resist the Wendy Adelson. LaCasa also painted a picture of Charlie as a man who bragged about bending the rules. Again, this speaks, I think, a lot more to what we were talking earlier about Charlie and the family in general. They don't know when to shut up. They're sitting in the hot tub one night together, and he's sitting there talking about life and money and hiding money and moving assets around and putting things in other people's names, you know, like you do when you're relaxing in the hot tub. Take a look.
Myself in the hot tub one time. She thinks Wendy said.
When was this?
March 15th-ish. I was there for the one day with him. I was staying at his house.
Of this year?
Yes. Wendy and him were talking. I'm just listening. I just met him an hour earlier. We're sitting in the hot tub having a beer. It's a really nice house. And, I guess this is what occurred.
Was anybody else in the hot tub with you guys?
Not during this part of the conversation. Another guy, his roommate, came in eventually, and then just started to talk about girls and stuff like that. But, and I'm not trying to play cop here, but I do know one thing you'd be looking for is a lump sum of money moving around and some kind of crazy stuff happened. And I think there's a lot of financial irregularities. I think there's a lot of tax fraud kind of stuff, putting stuff in different people's names and moving money around, and there might be cash. I don't know exactly what, but he's not doing anything on the up and up in his finances. It was pretty clear. It was pretty open about that. So I thought about that. Like,
I think a forensic accountant might be in order.
I think there might be a whole other line of charges here.
Oh, no doubt.
That should be looked at. I would imagine by now. Do you think the IRS has done an audit on the Adelsons by now, Robin?
So following the money is always what they're going to do in these things. So yeah. Anything having to do with that is definitely under investigation, or has been, or still ongoing.
Yeah.
No doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, that says a lot. I mean, the fact that they're sitting there, but it also makes me wonder, and this would be just pure speculation, what other crimes is this family behind, if any? I don't know. But it seems like they were pretty, easy to do this and move some money around. Or is this grandstanding? Is this because it was new and it was exciting and new, and Charlie got to be kind of the bad guy for a little bit, that he was so verbose about it and speaking about it like he's some sort of made man in a very foolish way, like one would do who has zero experience in this type of world?
Yeah, he's goes to me. It sounds like shock impact, for the new guy, the new boyfriend that shows up and to be the big guy. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to other crimes a family may or may not have done, they kind of strike me as the group that kind of has a decent idea, because there's lawyers in the family, of where that gray line is, and they kind of ride that gray line. So remember that, as we've said numerous times, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's ethical. I think they probably did a lot of things like that.
Good point.
I'm curious, at what point you don't just wake up one day and go, we're going to kill somebody. So I think there had to have been an escalation. Does that seem like a fair assessment? That they've just been doing this stuff forever and this was maybe the next step?
I think there was probably a triggering event. So if we look at, because definitely an escalation, you know, that's why this was such a great interview to watch. It gave me a lot of different context. This was definitely an escalation of frustration with the family as a whole, including Wendy, because I was really curious about what she thought about this, or was she being bullied by the mother and the Charlie to divorce this guy. But according to the ex-boyfriend, you know, this was an escalation that the family was having an issue with because of him. And I'm guessing there was a triggering event. There's usually a triggering event. And when you have someone like Charlie, and probably think all of them, that are having a hard time with emotional regulation, that he, as you said, he probably didn't wake up one morning and said, I'm just going to kill the guy. Maybe. So he might have just like woke, had just had this epiphany of not being able to get what he wanted. I keep trying, because you can imagine him. So here's this guy who's an absolute control freak, a mother who's an absolute control freak, and everything they're trying is not working. For the first time in their lives, they haven't been able to bully someone into what they want. And so it probably reached that point, maybe even together, where they work themselves up so much, because this is why she's on trial, work themselves up too much. Well, I'll screw it. I'll just hire a hitman.
Yeah. It's your time to fly, Charlie, I think is kind of what it was looked at from the perspective of Donna, if we're going to assume that she is behind it, you know, the same way. Wendy, you have to put on the performance of your life. Like, it's time for you guys to stand up on yourselves and manipulate the world around you the same way me and Father have for all of this time. That's kind of what it feels like in some of this. A triggering event, I think it was Dan. It was Dan finally saying, I'm done with your BS. I'm taking this to court and I'm getting this order against your mom that says that she can't have any contact with the kids. I think that was a triggering event. I think that's what made Donna go to Charlie and I can't sleep. I just need this. And then Charlie's going to Catherine. My mom can't sleep. I don't know what's going to happen. And she's like, well, have her start writing me some checks. We'll take care of the problem. And they're like, problem solved.
Yeah, you know, and when it comes to Wendy, because again, when you're seeing their family communication dynamic, and also how, and even Dr. Jeff said that they protect her, they don't exclude her. And so my thought process is, I can imagine that they were having these conversations, not intentionally around her, but not intentionally excluding her, but just not including her. And so kind of like she was aware that Charlie thought this because he said it in her presence. The probability of her not being shocked that this happened, because one thing she knew it, but also kind of the details, she probably, not probably, who knows. I could imagine that she was aware of what was going on. As soon as she saw like checks being passed, things being said, she walked away. I don't want to be included. Or they said, hey, you know, like, hold on a second, Wendy, why don't you go take care of the kids? So you can kind of see one of those things where it's not a huge covert op, because these people are incapable of covert ops outside this family dynamic. I mean, inside the family dynamic. And so that's why I think it was a very fluid situation internally.
Then how much responsibility does she bear if she knew about it? Isn't it? I mean, if she had nothing to do with the planning, but she also didn't go to the police and say, hey, my family's planning on killing my ex-husband either. I mean, that seems to be the part that she's left to bear. Knowledge of it. Yeah, I mean, that's something. I mean, it's like, I'm trying to think of some sort of analogy here. It's like going into the mall food court and knowing that they're selling orange chicken over there, but you don't want to get too close because they're going to come up to you with a sample and you don't want to have this. You just want to keep going.
But you know
the sample's over there and you can smell the orange chicken and you know it's there, but you're not going to partake in the orange
chicken. Damn it, Tony.
Yeah.
So I think what's the challenge with that is how do you prove it?
Yeah.
So if there's no text messages, there's no voice overhears, and no one's admitting to it, how do you prove it? So
that's
the challenge.
Because she's been around this family before, because she's had these conversations with this family before. But the fact that the conversations exist, does that mean that she
was in on it, I guess that's the thing.
But I don't know the law in Florida. You know, what's your culpability of knowledge without doing something about it?
Exactly.
There's some, but I'm not quite. Again, it's going to come down to the prosecutor and what they think they can go for and prosecute.
True.
And so, again, what is striking me of if the mother cared so much about the family, she would have taken the fall for everyone, including at this point. Like we said the other day, Tony. If she gets on the stand and says, it's all me, no one knew anything, I dictated this entire thing, and she just owns it, that would actually rally everyone in the family around her instead of, you know, kind of having leakage all over the place of what they really think or coming to discover about her. And so, but I don't think she's going to do that. I think she's going to go up and try to be her doppelganger.
Do you think she's going to go up on that stand and like throw everyone to the wolves? Like Wendy knew this.
I don't have any data. I would love to. Yeah. I haven't really seen her speak too much. And so I want more of her because it's hard to really kind of get in her shoes unless I've seen more of her shoes.
That's good. Because it feels like everybody's a weird sentence.
Right.
I was just watching Mindhunter last night, and it was what's his name who was obsessed with women's shoes.
That's creepy.
Anyway, but yeah. it does make you wonder what she's capable of, because I think everybody is treading a bit lightly around Donna right now, because she has power. She does. As much as she doesn't, she does. And she has the power to incriminate every single person in that family and put them behind bars for the rest of their lives. By going up there and saying whatever she wants. And I think they know that, except for the one son that got away. He's the only one I think that's safe. But everybody else, I think she could obliterate Charlie's appeal chances more than he already doesn't have them. But I think she could also put Charlie behind bars, put Harvey Wendy. Behind bars, and Wendy.
Oh. Maybe even unintentionally, because she's so stupid.
Yeah, unintentionally. Either or. I mean, I could see her trying to play it off as like, oh, oops, did I say that? You know, kind of Steve Urkel-ish.
I don't think she would, though. No, because when you keep going... Boy, it's easy to kind of put evil acts on people from the outside looking in, but internally they don't see themselves as evil, bad people. So think about this. From what we learned from Dr. Jeff, they see themselves as these righteous warriors trying to do the best thing they possibly can against this pure evil person, Dan, the ex-husband, to save these children. They all thought that's the crusade they're on. And the mother is shocked that no one's going along with that mindset.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're there to betray each other, because they were very unified in the fact that they're trying to save these children. Again, their mindset. That's how they rationalize this abhorrent behavior. That's why when Charlie woke up one morning saying, hey, I got a great idea. You know, the mother's like, huh.
Let's go to Showbiz Pizza and have lunch, Charlie. I know you're 38, but you can go in the ball tank and play around and ride the merry-go-round.
And then go get your little sister.
Yeah, go get her too. I know she's 30-something, but let's all go together. Yeah. Hold hands. We'll wear the same jumpsuits that we got at Kmart. Charlie.
Same ones in jail.
I bet those are the folks that would go get like the American flag jumpsuits and wore them proudly, you know, to the 4th of July picnic in 1992. Yeah. You know, they're all like,
yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Charlie wasn't just a wealthy dentist with a Ferrari. LaCase told detectives he also surrounded himself with men who lived on the other side of the tracks, including, he said, a special forces buddy with military experience, the kind of people who could make things happen. Here's Charlie grandstanding now.
Her brother is an unusual guy. Not much empathy. He's a dentist and he's very wealthy, but he kind of hangs out with people from both sides of the tracks. And you know, he goes boating in South Beach with his rich buddies, and he also goes to his gym with some other kinds of characters, kind of thing. So
some less savory individuals.
I think so. Yeah, he's got a buddy who is special forces.
You talked about a couple of guys. You talked about Miguel and the Patel individual. And you said there was three or four total.
I'm just trying to think. Hold on. That might be it, actually. Yeah, Daniel. That was three. Daniel Sack. I can't imagine any of those people had anything to do with this. But those people that were... don't know anything about Sack's relationship. Miguel and Huel definitely really into Wendy, obviously.
So he's hanging out with not the nicest folks.
It's fine. I just love Dr. Jeff. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. Not the nicest folks in the world. Folks on both sides of the tracks, according to him. I guess I'd like to know more about that pattern of behavior. Was Charlie always hanging with the folks that, you know, were on the other side of the tracks, according to Jeff? Or was this something that he had to kind of wade into to try and make mom happy by getting connections that were not necessarily ones that we're going to make at the country club?
Well, that's a really good question. Whether that's a new pattern or an established pattern, I would think he had been doing that much of his life because otherwise he wouldn't be so comfortable doing it. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Jeff strikes me as a guy, he would have picked up on whether Charlie was comfortable doing it in this kind of situation. He probably would have highlighted it because Dr. Jeff seems pretty observant of mm-hmm. people's behavior and changes in those patterns. And so to him, it seemed completely natural and normal for Charlie to do that. I think he would have given some sort of inclination that Charlie didn't feel quite comfortable doing it. He seemed a little awkward in his own language and his own body. I mean, so there'd be he would notice something with his behavior when talking about those people or those situations. But it seems, again, I don't have that history of Charlie mm-hmm. strong enough to know that. But my guess is he's been doing that and hanging out with people from all over a long period of time. Also because, you know, so glass half full here, they seem to, with the exception of killing Dan, that they're making an attempt to, you know, from maybe a kind of twisted, you know, of not judging, you know, because I mean, the behavior by Charlie seems pretty open to others. Again, it's part of his dynamic of controlling others, mm-hmm. but at the same time, he seemed comfortable around him. So what makes someone feel comfortable is like you can identify with them. And it wasn't just shady people, because as mm-hmm. Dr. Jeff was saying, they're from all different walks of life. So he's got other people that are making high money. He's got people that are military. He's got people that are actually hitmen. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it was kind of eclectic and all over. So I'm really kind of curious as to how Charlie identified with all these other people with all these different varied backgrounds. There's something about them that he was attracted to, and I'd be curious what that pattern was.
I'm going to guess Charlie and maybe even Wendy, to a certain extent, both have struggled with their own identities because mm-hmm. they've been extensions of mom.
They don't have so them. Long.
You don't have them. So, I mean, there's like a very thin sense of what that is, not like to the level of like Brian Koberger not having any clue, but when you're enmeshed with a narcissistic parent, I mean, you're not given that. That's something you're not allowed to have, is your own personality. You got to be an extension of that person. And then as you get older into adulthood, some break off and some do not. One of the most haunting sequences here, Lacasse described the last time he saw Wendy alive before the killing, a yoga class, an awkward goodbye, an email from her therapist hours later telling him not to contact her. And then just 3 days after that, Dan Markell was murdered. Take a look at this.
So Tuesday night, we go to yoga. Really awkward. Most awkward yoga. And then we walk to the car. And I say, love you, Wendy. She goes, I know. Need some time. I said, okay. And I get an email with a no contact order 2 hours later. I think her therapist suggested she do this. I think her therapist, my suspicion is that Wendy told her once that the story now is cast as the abusive male, because Danny is not good to her and she's on the lookout for an abusive male. Danny was emotional abuse. Anyway, I get this email saying, don't contact me for 7 days and then I'll get in touch, which I was not happy about. But, a control grab for me. Let's just talk or just break up with me, you know. But anyway, so Wednesday, Thursday, hear nothing. She posts those pictures on Facebook with her boobs hanging out. And people are telling me she's messing with you on the internet. I don't know if that was true or not. And then Friday, So I haven't heard from her. She's was supposed to contact me tomorrow.
How do you know she was supposed to contact
you? She said 7 days.
Oh, okay. So that thing, the email.
Yeah. It's also contact you in 7 days.
So that, you think that's something her therapist recommend her do to give her time to think?
That's my guess.
Let the air clear a little bit.
That's my guess. If you Google it, it's how you break up with an emotionally abusive guy. You're yourself 7 days away from him, so we can't convince you to stay. So that's what I saw when I Googled it, because I never heard of this. No girl's ever done that. That's bizarre, right? I mean, anyway, so that was 3 days later. This happens. Yeah, Danny gets shot.
I would put money that Jeff is exactly right, that she's painted this guy to be a certain character to her therapist. And then the therapist gives, okay, here's the directive of what you should do. And that has nothing to do with the actual person, but it's the way you've painted them. So that person's giving you directive on how to deal with something over here that's not actually there.
Yeah. You know, part of me that was also saying, you know, was this Charlie giving her direction? Because I know part of the theory here was, were they getting ready to pin it on Dr. Jeff?
I think they were trying to. Yeah.
It was
a very loose, dumb plan.
Yeah. And so I could definitely see that playing out, like Charlie saying, hey, here's what I need you to do. Break contact with this dude now, because we're going to try to pin it on him.
Yeah. And tell your therapist that I would love to get those notes. I think that could be, I don't know if you can subpoena that, because, well, you have a murder involved here.
Yeah, I would think you could.
I mean, I think that goes into mandatory reporting at that point.
Right.
So I'd be very curious about those notes if they were to look closer into Wendy, because that would be extreme. That would probably answer all the questions of, you know, what was she aware of and when? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, because you get that phone call from Wendy all those days later, which does end up happening. And where were you at this time? What about this time there? And it puts him where he would have been close to the murder scene, or where they did this conversation before the murders took place. And then they had the hitmen go to those areas. So this is their dumbass plan. It was simply find out where he's going to be. And then let's have them go there. Then we can say it was him. Problem solved. I mean, it's like...
It just really shows how people like this think. They think everyone else is completely stupid and they're the only smart people in the world.
It's Sesame Street murder plotting. I mean, it's...
Like you said, it's funny, man.
It really is. When it came to Wendy's family, LeKay said they weren't just close, they were suffocating. This is a really interesting one. He described parents who still chauffeured her around at age 35, a family that treated her like a child in an unhealthy grip that kept her tethered to South Florida. This explains a lot. Take a look.
Family, it's important that you know this, actually, man. The family is so unhealthily enmeshed. So completely enmeshed that Wendy is not really an adult. When she drives to South Florida, every single time those two parents drive up here and drive with her down. They don't trust her to drive to Tallahassee, Miami. They're just, it's not a normal family. It's not like she's a 35-year-old woman that has two kids and come down to see us. It's complete enmeshment. It's a matter of, they didn't patentize her. She's considered the baby still. She's 35 years old. Charlie protects her.
You see how powerful she was, though? So even he knows it. He recognizes it. So I'm always amazed when people recognize unhealthy, yet they make the choice to stay.
Sure.
And still has hope of being let back into that circle of crazy. So,
And the sad part is, I think it's because so many of us have had crazy in our life that for some reason, unconsciously, a lot of us, it's like, well, it feels comfortable.
It's comfortable. I was just going to say, it's comfortable. It's what you've done for 20 years. It's what you do.
Yeah. And that's, you know, even though you can, we're very good at identifying it in other people. We're not the greatest at identifying it always in our own lives.
That's why he is so comical to me. He's become my favorite character in this entire thing. I would call him sad because he's got this dry wit about him. He doesn't even realize he's doing it. Like the listening to him, like, do you realize how ludicrous you're sounding?
Yeah. And I, she's
yeah. for the show.
I, you know, you're almost, I mean, I wonder how much the relationship there was like, I almost just want to get back into it just to watch more and just see what happens. I didn't even care.
I wanted it. And then and the funny thing to me, so this just happened and he's still hopeful she's going to call him. Dude, you should run and run fast and far.
Yeah,
and they're like, trying. Oh, she's still going to call me. There's still a 1% chance we'll get back together.
They're trying to frame you for murder.
You want into this family? What's wrong with you?
Something must have been really good for him to still have.
Imagine the debt you could write.
So that's why I'm not discounting Charlie's skill set, because, like we said, they learned it all from her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Donna created these two. And so she's got the skill set. Obviously, this guy is living proof of it, and he's talking about how she's using it with everyone. I mean, just looking at her on the stand, you can get a sense of it. Mm-hmm. But now, so as they're painting Charlie behind the scenes, it's hard to imagine that, because they seem like apples and oranges. They look so differently, but probably not. So he's probably got the skill set. But he just flips it on and off. I just think it's her natural state of being that she just learned how to learned how to just live as a grand manipulator of the world around her for feeling safe and control and all those things that she was lacking.
I imagine there's a lot of confusion in the world of Wendy these days. I mean, just as a human being, just trying to ground herself into who the hell she is, especially now that she hasn't been in contact with mom for a couple years. That's not there. Charlie's gone. All you got is, I mean, that's incredibly jarring. Take all the murder out of it. I mean, there's got to be a lot of confusion. That's
older brother.
Yeah.
All that's of it. Why you have the older brother now.
There's a lot of therapy going on in that family, or there should be if there isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how much of that happens behind bars. Probably not a lot, but yeah. All right. Well, there you go. We're going to be seeing Donna, as far as we know, take the stand this week. That'll be very telling to see exactly what we get out of her. And I'm sure we will be breaking that down piece by piece. Robin Drake, of course, thank you for joining us. As always, his book, Unbreakable Alliances, get it wherever you get books or audiobooks. It is out there for you right now. And you out there, thank you for listening to our first and watching our first live edition of the program, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon every day. YouTube, Facebook, and on X is where it will be broadcast. So make an appointment to be there and join in with us, and be sure to leave your comments in the comment section as well. All right. Until next time, for everybody here, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
All right.